President Biden will now let Ukraine fire long-range U.S. missiles into Russia.
Biden is clearing Ukraine for actions its leaders have wanted for some time. The U.S. has avoided too much provocation of the world's other leading nuclear weapons state. But now Biden acts shortly before the coming of a new administration whose approach to Ukraine is uncertain.
For more on how this fits into Ukraine's larger military effort, we're joined by NPR national security correspondent Greg Myrie. Hi, Greg.
Hi, Layla.
So what's changed? Why is President Biden deciding to do this with 2 months left in his presidency?
Well, he seems to be acting now because Russia is using some 10,000 North Korean troops in a bid to push Ukrainian forces out of Russian territory. This is according to a U.S. official who spoke to our NPR colleague Tom Bowman. Mm-hmm. Now, Ukraine captured a chunk of the Kursk region in western Russia, about 500 square miles, back in August. These Russian and North Korean forces are clawing back some of that territory in heavy fighting. The Ukrainians will now be able to use these U.S. missiles, known as attackums, to try to hold this territory.
But is President Biden no longer worried about provoking Russia here?
Well, no. I mean, all along, his concern has been a possible Russian escalation. But now he seems the priority is signaling that his administration wants to do what it can before leaving office in January. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said last week, quote, "Every dollar we have at our disposal will be pushed out the door."
And how much will the long-range missiles help Ukraine being able to use them?
Well, yeah, Layla, they should certainly help. Ukraine's argument throughout the war is that Russia can move around troops and weapons with a large degree of freedom behind the front lines on the Russian side of the border because Ukraine was unlikely to attack them from long distance. So the attackums will make it riskier for the Russians to operate in these areas. However, there are real limits to this new policy. The U.S. said the Russians have already pulled back things like warplanes to take them out of missile range. And the U.S. is just providing a limited number of attackums because their own stockpile is limited and they need to keep some in the U.S. arsenal. The attackums can travel about 200 miles. They're quite powerful. Yet while Ukraine has been waiting for this permission from the U.S., it's been building its own attack drones, which can travel even longer distances, though they don't pack quite the same punch.
Now, we talked about how this is really just 2 months left in the Biden administration. Could the incoming Trump administration just change this missile policy and others related to Ukraine?
Oh, yes, absolutely. And Trump has been saying he wants negotiations to end the war. The Ukrainians are concerned they'll face pressure to make concessions to Russia, including territorial concessions, which they've adamantly opposed. And Trump has also expressed opposition to more U.S. military assistance. The U.S. had this $61 billion package for Ukraine back in April, and it's working its way through this. U.S. officials say the aid already approved is likely to go ahead, but additional money is now an open question.
And meanwhile, winter's approaching, which changes the way this fight happens. What are you watching for?
Yeah, Layla, just yesterday, Russia carried out a heavy strike, 200 missiles and drones, one of the heaviest in months. And every winter, Russia is expected, as it has in the past, to wage sustained attacks on Ukraine's power grid. And this has done a lot of cumulative damage, and it will remain a big vulnerability.
That's NPR's Greg Myrie. Thank you, Greg.
Sure thing.
Leaders of the world's largest economies are gathering in Rio de Janeiro in Brazil today and tomorrow.
It's President Biden's last Group of 20 summit and a tricky one. Some of the measures he's expected to sign on to are not supported by the incoming administration.
We go to NPR's South America correspondent to hear more. Hi, Carrie Kahn.
Hi, good morning.
So what's the mood like in Rio right now as these world leaders gather there at the beach?
The sun's out. It's a picture postcard day here, so that should help with the mood. President-elect Trump's return, though, and global conflicts in the Middle East and Ukraine are all hanging over the summit. President Biden arrived here late last night. He made a stop first in the Amazon and pledged new U.S. funds for rainforest protection. He didn't mention Trump there, who dismisses global warming, but Biden did take some jabs at those who he says would, quote, deny or delay America's clean energy revolution.
Nobody can reverse it. Nobody. Not when so many people, regardless of party or politics, are enjoying its benefits.
Also yesterday at the G20 venue, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres was asked how world leaders should prepare for another Trump administration. He urged them to, quote, race much faster to tackle common challenges like climate change and inequality. But also, he said, strengthen global governance and institutions now.
And if you are able in all these areas to make a strong bet on multilateralism, that is the best possible response.
Okay, so Trump's not there and not president yet, but he is looming large already during the summit. What are the G20 leaders going to address this week?
The host, Brazil's president, Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, a leftist, remains unfazed and is pushing ahead with his progressive proposals. That they include a tax on the world's wealthiest and plans to alleviate poverty and hunger. Over the weekend, he blasted, quote, neoliberalism for aggravating economic and political inequality.
Para chegar ao coração dos cidadãos comuns.
He says to reach the hearts of citizens, governments need to close that gap between the voice of the markets and the voice of the streets. Lula's been trying to position himself as a world leader, especially on issues of climate change. But here at home, his leftist party took a beating in last month's nationwide elections. He's also dealing with far-right leaders in South America, like former President Jair Bolsonaro and Argentina's ultra-libertarian Javier Milei, who are both feeling quite emboldened with Trump coming back to power.
Now, these summits are also a lot of posturing, photo ops, but are you expecting any surprises?
I think the wild card here will be Milei, the Argentina's president. He's just back from Florida, where he personally congratulated Trump. He's known for his brash showmanship abroad. He just pulled out of the COP29 climate talks, and he also had Argentina cast the lone vote against a UN resolution condemning gender-based violence. His negotiators here signed on to the G20's draft joint declaration, but there's talk that they won't now, especially with that global tax on the super rich in it. So we'll be watching him.
NPR's Carrie Kahn. Thank you, Carrie.
You're welcome.
Fentanyl and other street drugs are still killing nearly 100,000 people in the U.S. every year.
That number has been dropping, but is still very high. So what does a new administration plan to do about it? President-elect Trump made several big promises while campaigning, and people who work on the issue now assess how they would turn out.
NPR addiction correspondent Brian Mann is here to talk us through some of Trump's ideas. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning.
So how does Donald Trump say he'll end fentanyl overdoses?
Well, it's interesting. Over the last 4 years, we saw the Biden administration really shift the fentanyl street drug response to a public health model. That means a lot more treatment and better medications. Donald Trump's focus during the campaign was very different, a big pivot. He talked almost exclusively about cracking down on fentanyl traffickers and dealers, securing the border. Here's Trump talking during one of his rallies.
Sure, I heard you want the death penalty for drug dealers. Why?
Well, you know, I'd like to end the drug epidemic, if that's okay.
And then after the election, Layla, the man Trump named to serve as border czar, Tom Homan, raised the stakes, promising U.S. military action against Mexican drug cartels during an appearance on Fox News.
President Trump is committed to calling them terrorist organization and using the full might of the United States Special Operations to take them out.
Okay, so that's a pretty drastic change, a big pivot from the public health approach. Do experts think this will work?
Well, the short answer is no. Even a lot of drug policy and addiction experts who do want a tougher response to fentanyl tell me they're worried Trump's team will go too far. Jonathan Calkins is a drug policy analyst at Carnegie Mellon University.
Even invoking the idea of military action in Mexico against traffickers, the worst idea anybody has ever had.
Calkins and other experts believe, Layla, that U.S. military strikes would do little to slow fentanyl smuggling or save American lives, but it could shatter diplomatic relations and destabilize Mexico. I also spoke about Trump's policy ideas with Brandon Del Pozo, a former police chief who studies drug policy at Brown University. He blasted Trump's idea of giving drug dealers the death penalty. He called it ineffective and unethical.
There are thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of Americans who are our neighbors. We're doing something that's illegal, right? They're definitely dealing drugs, but they might be doing it because they're addicted to drugs. The idea that we would execute them, that shocks the conscience.
Okay, so he calls it ineffective and unethical, but I imagine there are people who like and support this Trump getting tough approach.
Yeah, absolutely. There is a view among some drug policy thinkers that the response to fentanyl got too liberal, sort of too soft and tolerant. Tom Wolf is an activist in California himself in recovery from opioid addiction.
People are tired of the theft. They're tired of the open drug use, and they want some accountability to be injected back into the process.
Wolf thinks Trump's get tough message worked because people are tired of this crisis. They want people using fentanyl off their streets, out of their parks and neighborhoods.
Now, we talked about the Biden administration's focus on public health. As they hand over the reins, is there any sign that was working?
Well, you know, drug deaths actually dropped sharply over the last year, a trend that saved about 16,000 lives, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. A lot of people I talk to say they're worried Trump will cut or defund programs like the Affordable Care Act that appear to be helping. One more thing I'm hearing is that no one believes this crisis can be solved fast. Progress is being made, but the fix for fentanyl is expected to take years, maybe decades.
That's Brian Mann, NPR's addiction correspondent, looking ahead at the Trump team's plan to tackle the fentanyl crisis. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you.